Welcome to this very special episode of our Problemhunde podcast, or in English, it's a podcast about problems with dog behavior. And I'm really nervous today because it's the first episode in English, and I was never good in English, but I'm also nervous because we have a super special guest today. She's from India. It's Sindhu Bangal. I hope I pronounced it right. And she's a super special guest because she's not only the founder from Barks, she's also a dog behavior consultant. She's a TED speaker. She's the author of the book Dog Knows. She's studying free living dogs in India. So we have very much in common, but not the country. And I could go on with this list for 10 more minutes, but I think we will start right now. So thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to this.
Could you a little bit explain what you're doing in your own words to our audience?
Sure. So I started working as a behavior consultant. I studied with Tore Drugas in Norway. And so I was consulting for companion dogs, looking at, I was usually approached when dogs had what people consider as problem behaviors. Yeah. And then I started also observing because of the kind of training tour it gave me. I started observing free living dogs in India. So sort of my research interest picked up. And today I run Barks, which is an organization where we offer education for professionals. So we offer a diploma for professionals, but we also have shorter workshops for just everybody so that they can come and learn a little bit about our way of dealing with dogs, which is interesting because it's very heavily informed by observation of street dogs. And in India, and I think we'll talk about this a lot more, in India, the dogs are very, very approachable. These dogs interact with us a lot. But at the same time, it's not like we can be out there training these dogs. So we cross paths a lot. We interact with each other a lot. And so there's a lot of communication that doesn't involve training, but that goes into creating a peaceful coexistence, a cohabitation. And when I say peaceful, I don't mean there's no conflict, but largely kind of are okay with each other. And so that's how we manage ourselves around dogs is very unique. And that is kind of goes into the course, and I inform the course with that. And so people can learn different ways of bonding with dogs that are outside of the area of training.
Yeah.
I'm also doing my master's in anthrozoology, which is studying human-animal entanglements. I'm studying it at Exeter in the UK. And then all of the other things that you said.
Wow, awesome. So is it a common job in India to be a dog trainer or a dog behaviorist? Because I never was in India, but I didn't think that it's a common job, right?
Yeah, it's definitely not common, though it's increasing in urban spaces a lot more. But you must understand that this form of dog ownership, as the Western world is very familiar with, is relatively new in India. It's not we've coexisted with dogs, but not necessarily owned these animals, and having them completely as indoor dogs is a very modern urban idea. And so the notion of dog trainers only becomes relevant in that situation. It's very new, though we are beginning to see urban India seeing a significant and rapid rise in everything related to what one calls the pet industry, right? Which is very different from what animals need. But the pet industry, I think, in India is perhaps the most rapidly growing in the world at this point.
Wow. Didn't know that. Wow. We talked about this topic before in our email conversations, because you said that you're not a dog trainer, but a dog behaviorist. And my audience is most of them are from German and Switzerland and Austria, so German speaking language. And we don't have this difference between dog training and dog behaviorist. So could you tell us a little bit about this?
So I don't use the phrase behaviorist. I use the term behavior consultant because the term behaviorist is usually in some parts of the world reserved for veterinary behaviorists, so people who have a veterinary degree and can prescribe medication. So and that's not all over the world, but in some parts of the world. So I want to avoid confusion. There's no medication involved. I think the reason I call myself a behavior consultant and not a trainer is because I don't do any training. That's not what we focus on. So a lot of what we do in terms of working with dogs is understanding where the behavior comes from. So if there's a behavior that we do not appreciate, where is that behavior coming from? And therefore, there's a lot of emphasis on the notion of ethology, what is considered normal behavior for dogs. Some behaviors that we may not like are just natural behaviors for dogs. That's just what they do. So once we understand that, we realize that maybe what the dog needs is not training. Maybe the dog just needs us to redirect them into expressing their behavior. So if a dog, for instance, chewing things is something that it's just normal part of dog behavior. It's just normal part of dog ethology. And it's also very good for them. It can bring down their stress hormones. It can increase feel good hormones. So as a behavior consultant, what I do, or rather nowadays what my students do, they're expected to understand this. They're expected to understand that, a behavior may have a certain function. And so I'm not just going to, if my dog is chewing up everything in the house, I'm just not going to just train the dog or punish the dog or reward the dog. No, I understand that you are chewing because you have a need. Number one, I'm going to understand, is it a heightened need? Are you having excessive need for chewing? If so, what else is going on? And address that. And automatically the amount of chewing kind of comes down. And two is this a normal level of chewing requirements in a dog? And in which case, I'll give you things to chew on that are going to be very interesting and healthy and right for you. And so that's kind of how we manage the situation in most cases, or actually all cases. So there's no training involved, and that's why I say I'm not a dog trainer.
Let's see. And you do a lot of research about three different dogs, but you have different categories. You tell the one category is a farm dog, the one are streeties, the one are dogs which someone just put on the street to go on holiday. So can you tell us a little bit about this categories?
Sure. So I talk about free living dogs in India, and free living dogs meaning dogs that are not owned and live on the streets or live on, just live outside. And there are many categories of free living dogs that one can see in India, like you rightly pointed out. One that I think a lot of people in Europe are used to seeing, or parts of North America and things like that, those dogs are usually stray dogs. Stray dogs meaning they were once part of a family, they were once owned or by somebody, or belonged to somebody, or being taken care of by somebody, and now no more. So maybe they got lost, or they got abandoned, or something like that. And so they are now out on the streets by themselves. And that's what, those are the kind of free living dogs that most people in parts of Europe and North America kind of see. Those dogs are often not very frequently seen in India, because if they're usually pet dogs, they do not have the skills to survive on their own on the streets of India. Like I mentioned, you're stuck in traffic, and if you have seen traffic in India,
I can imagine.
pet dogs or companion dogs or our home dogs do not know how to handle situations like that. So they don't survive, sadly, for too long, or they tend to get picked up and rescued by shelters. A lot of shelters will prioritize these dogs and rescue them because they don't have the survival skills, and will try to put them into homes. Or they're very smart, so they tend to go into homes. I have seen some of these dogs, and I'm thinking, I think this might have been somebody's dog. This might have been somebody's home dog. And then I see these dogs kind of go and find new homes and they convince people that adopt me. So one way or the other, you don't see too many of those dogs in India. The other category of dogs are feral dogs. These dogs tend to be once upon a time, they were pet dogs or companion dogs. And now they're living on their own, but they're living in places where they can easily be captured. The government or the people tend to capture them. And so they have moved as far away from human beings. So they live in areas that are very sparsely populated. They don't come very close to human beings. They run at the sight of human beings. They're terrified. They usually are in large groups. They live in large groups.
Okay.
And they rely more on scavenging and maybe even a little bit of hunting kind of behaviors. Mm-hmm.
So they live these are feral.
Oh yeah, almost like a pack, exactly.
Okay.
So you
how
see
many
a little
dogs
bit
are
of
there in one pack?
It could be. I think the biggest I have seen, because again we don't see that many feral dogs in India either. Those kind of could be maybe 10 dogs, sometimes 15 dogs. Yeah, so these can be kind of really large groups.
But they don't live at a place where they get food, so they live really in the mountains in this pack.
Not mountains, but they live away. Yeah, they live away from. So these are feral dogs, and these again you can see. You do see some in India. You will see them in most parts of the world. But a lot of times the dogs that you see in, you know, parts of Eastern Europe and things like that can also be feral dogs.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there are the dogs that the Indian street dogs. These dogs are born on the streets, brought up on the streets. They were never anybody's dogs. They were, you know, for several generations, they have been living there. They are brought up by other dogs. There are not, humans have not brought them up. They have been mentored and taught to be a dog by another dog. And they do not run away from humans either. They're not afraid of us. So many of the pictures and videos that I put up are of our street dogs. You can see how friendly they are.
Yeah.
And generally in India, because they have a constitutional protection, they're comfortable. They are okay with human beings. They're not afraid of human beings because we are not allowed to actually catch them and kill them,
okay.
Or not even it's not legal to relocate them either. So okay. Most people don't do that. Some people do it, and it's illegal. But
okay, wow.
Most people don't do anything to these dogs. Most people will, in fact, be friendly and maybe even feed them a little bit and things like that. So the dogs are also very, very friendly and sometimes even well-fed to the point of being a little fat. And these are the dogs that I find most interesting.
Yeah.
Out here on the farm, the dogs that are free living dogs that are here are very similar to the street dogs of India. They're quite friendly animals. And in fact, many of them have been wanting to move into my house. They're that friendly.
Yeah. But that's super interesting that you are not allowed to take them as a pet. Because I do research about street dogs a lot. We go to Romania, Bulgaria, Turkey, and all these places. And they are all those countries are happy if you take those stray dogs with you and take them as pets. So that's very interesting.
No, you can take them as a pet. You cannot relocate them. You cannot remove them from one street and put them on another street.
Okay, but I could, so if I find a dog in this country, I could take it at home to another part of India. Ah, okay, that's okay.
Yes, you can take them into your house if you want to.
Okay,
but you cannot take them from one street and leave them on another street, because if you do, they are territorial animals. So if you leave them in another street, the dogs in that street are going to hurt these dogs. So so it's not allowed. Yeah.
Okay, but it's also very interesting that they live in packs, because, as I said, we go to Romania. We're in Portugal at the moment. And also in Romania, there are so many street dogs, or streeties as you call them, like dogs which were born on the street. And I only saw big, big packs at places at a restaurant or where they get food. but not on a field, not in the mountains, not in the woods, because I only saw most of the time that there's only one dog, or maybe there are two befriended dogs, but they're not large packs like you told me. But because you said that, I was in Romania as a child when I was about eight years, and that's true. At this time there were many more dogs, and this time they form packs. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
super interesting.
But within the city they rarely do, because you know, within the city, if they stay in large groups, it's not necessarily good for them. You know, because in the city, these dogs rely primarily on begging as a primary mode of food. So they will go near restaurants, and if they go in large numbers, people get afraid.
Yeah,
they're going to not want to give them anything. But if there's one cute dog who comes, you know, people don't mind giving some food.
Yeah.
So they may sleep in larger groups. And when I say larger, I mean, you know, anywhere between 3 to 5 dogs maybe.
Yeah.
And so when they're sleeping, they kind of are in the same area, because it makes sense, so that, you know, they are kind of paying attention to who's in, you know, if there's any danger and things like that. But when they go looking for food, they usually go alone. When they're going exploring, they might go in, you know, 2 dogs at a time, but not in, they don't move in large groups.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. But also in the woods or in the fields of Romania, I didn't see dogs in large groups, but there was in 2014, between 2014 and 2017, they killed, I think, 90% of the population, of the free roaming population of dogs, because they said that some dogs killed a child. But afterwards, I found out that they were guide dogs. But anyway, they killed an enormous number of dogs. And I think only the most fearful dogs survived at this time. So I think maybe that's also the reason why they are not so big packs anymore. Because I saw them when I was a child, because there were many more dogs. Yeah, it's super interesting.
Yeah. And they're extremely adaptable animals. And so I find it, when people talk about dogs and say dogs are pack animals, or dogs are, you know, not pack animals, you
really
see
depends.
Every kind of social structure amongst dogs. And that is the most critical part about them. Dogs are highly adaptable animals, because they've had to live around human beings, and it's the whims and fancies of human beings. Like you said, you know, there's going to be a political agenda which will impact these dogs. There's going to be a religious agenda which will impact the dogs. And so whatever works for different parts of the world, for different populations, their policies, their tolerance, their hate, you know, accordingly, dogs will alter their behaviors to kind of ensure that they survive amongst us. And we are a very finicky species. They have to be very, very flexible.
Yeah. And as you said, there are so many types of dogs. So there are dogs which are more comfortable in a little pack. There are dogs which are more comfortable alone. And it's also, I think, because if we are talking about, I don't know, rabbits, there are not this many types of rabbits, or horses or whatever, bears, anyway. But there are so many breeds and types of dogs. There are guide dogs, there are hunting dogs, and there are all those mixes. And in every country, there are different types of dogs. Because I don't know if it's the same in your country, but I'm originally from Austria. Now I live on an island close to England. And in my country, or in all these German language books, people write down, well, dogs sleep 15 to 17 hours per day, puppies 20 sometimes. And now I do a research project in Portugal, Spain, Romania, Turkey, and all over Europe. And we would also like to continue this in America. And we put GPS collars with activity trackers on dogs. And some dogs sleep 17 hours, some don't. So some do not. So it's you cannot say dogs do this, because there are so many different types of dogs.
Yeah, and I think one of the, and this is a strong theme that kind of emerged when I was doing during my master's as well, I think we have a tendency as human beings to try and generalize what is not us. Yeah. Everything outside of, and just think about it, right? We say humans and animals. So our species yeah. alone, and then we generalize every other species into one category, animals. Yeah. And we have these ideas about animals. And then per species, even with human beings, we do that. People from my country and others. Yeah. And, you know, those kind of people of that religion, people of that color, people of that gender. And we have generalizations, you know, for all of them. And the truth is that at the end of the day, we are all individuals. And I think that's also the reason why I moved away from training to behavior consulting, because I also started seeing that there was a lot of, every dog had, just like every human being, there is a story there. It is who they are, what they have been through that molds and shapes them in so many different ways. And that, I think, the biggest strength I gained was to be able to see them as individuals, and I could make much more impact on them than going in with a notion of, you know, this is what I expect of you. At the same time, I think there's also a certain, we can't go to the, you know, sort of not, we tend to do what we call egomorphizing, which is that we tend to think that dogs, we forget sometimes that they're dogs.
Yeah.
We start having expectations the way we have of human beings out of them.
Yeah, children, babies.
Yeah.
Partners.
And so I think it's also important to, while it's important to see them as individuals, it's also important to understand that they belong to a different species. And being, what it means to be a dog is different from what it means to be a person. So what gives them joy could be very different from what gives us joy. Yeah. How they cope with stress could be very different. I might cope with stress by chewing nails, but Chiru might cope with stress by ripping, you know, chewing on the blanket and, you know, tearing it up. And so I, you know, mine is, you look at my behavior and you say, oh, person, though, you're nervous. What are you nervous about? But you look at Chiru's behavior and say, oh, what a bad dog. You tore everything up.
Yeah,
I think understanding that difference, that, you know, that's a dog thing. That's what dogs do. Also is important. So it's a fine balance to strike.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. Also, dogs living on the street, at least in the German language countries, Germany, Switzerland, and Austria, I hear the sentence so much, because we post a lot about the stray dogs. I mean, stray dogs are all dogs living on the street, in my words. And so often we get the message, oh my goodness, it's such a poor dog. I would like to adopt him. And I see this dog. It's not a skinny dog. It's not a dog freezing. It's a happy dog. It's a little shy dog. This dog wouldn't be happy if you put it in a home. Or at least it would take very long until this dog is comfortable. So what do you think about this? Because many people think that every dog which is living on the street is sad and would like to have a loving home and be a companion dog.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it to a huge extent, I think it comes from our opinion of ourselves as some kind of saviors. And that, you know, the luxuries that we can provide is what matters most to animals. Out here on the farm, I see a lot of free living animals. I see snakes, I see peacocks, I see mongooses, I see dogs, I see cats. And yes, there are animals that want to live on my plot. There are animals that want their freedom. Yeah. They would not trade it for anything. They value their freedom more than anything else. They're very, very clear that, you know, you give, if you want to be nice to me, you can give me some food, you can pet me, but don't put me, you know, in your house. I'm not interested. You know, we could say, oh, you poor thing, I think you need a house. But the dog doesn't seem to think so. The dog doesn't seem to think that what you have to offer is so great. The dog thinks that his freedom or her freedom is more important. Think about human beings. If you saw somebody suffering a lot and you said, oh, you know, I will give you food, I will give you a house, but you have to give up your freedom. Would all humans appreciate that?
No.
Suddenly, it's a very offensive statement to make, right? You're talking about, oh, how can you say that about human beings? Why do we assume that animals don't appreciate their freedom?
Yeah.
Why? And we see that they do, actually. Yeah. Most any other animal on the farm, you know, if I try to capture them and put them inside my house and say, you know, I'll give you food, I'll give you, you know, most of the animals are going to be trying their best to make a hole from my wall and get out. They do not want to be confined. And I think that's something that we have to think a little wider, think a little, you know, past this idea of ourselves as saviors. And we do this to each other as human beings too. There are people who go to other parts of the world and say, oh, we're going to save you. We're going to, you know, do this, this, this. Have you asked the people there what they need and what they want?
Yeah.
What you're bringing in may not be what they want. And they may not be willing to give up what you're asking them to give up.
Yeah.
There's a trade there. And that is an important thing for us to consider, is that our presence is not always the best thing for them.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think with dogs, I think some people take the other opposite extreme stand, which is to say, oh, street dogs should never get adopted.
Mm.
They, you know, all of them want their freedom. That's not
it's
true
just
either.
Black and like, white. It's so much also in training, just positive or no. It's always this black and white thing. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I see the same thing out here. The dogs that are on the farm, some of them, one of them is very interested in kind of moving in and being on my farm. She wants to be my dog here. You know, her name is Chaita, and my dog Chiru is not very fond of her. Chiru is fond of another dog who I've called Elvis, and she wants Elvis to move into our house. But Elvis doesn't want to live here.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to live anywhere that he can't walk out of. He wants his freedom. And I think, again, looking at them as individuals rather than blanket statements and understanding that they have a reality that we may not understand, but we have to respect and we have to observe and see what's right for the dog, not walk in with a certain arrogance that we know what is right for every dog.
Yeah.
And, you know, what we bring in is what they appreciate the most. I don't think I've seen street dogs fight it so hard. They try and they manage to climb over the walls. Indian street dogs are really good at climbing. So they will climb over walls and run away. They don't want to stay.
Yeah, I had a foster dog earlier this year and she was caught with a dot. So like this thing where you catch the dog. And she was so shy. Nobody could touch her in the shelter. But the government said, if you don't put her in the shelter, we will kill her. Because they are only allowed a certain number of dogs in this area. And I always take the worst dog of a shelter every year, train it and rehome it. And with this dog, her name was Jess. And I mean, she has now a very good home. She's super happy in this home. But it was such a stressful time for her, this whole training process, because she was not really a domestic dog anymore. She was a dog living in the forest, in the mountains, and since generations. And then you put her out, she never had any contact to humans. And I kind of felt really bad to train her, because I know it's not, she don't want to do that. She don't want to live in a home yet. I mean, now she likes it, she can run off leash and is super happy now, but it was very stressful for her and I didn't like to train her really, because she would be so much more happier if I would just take her and set her free in the forest. But if I would do that, the government would kill her, so I couldn't do that. And not every street dog is unhappy.
Yeah. And I think that's the other thing we need to remember. A lot of times when we talk about these arguments, a lot of people who make the argument saying, remove the dog from the street and move them to the house because that's a better life for them. Mm. That's what they're saying. But there's layers to it. What's also kind of not being said is we want to take them off the streets. Not because it's better for them, but we don't want dogs on the streets.
Yeah.
That's inconvenient for us. Or we don't like to see dogs on the streets. It's unpleasant to our eyes. That's also why I don't like to use the word stray for the dogs here, because the word stray, just in the way we say it, a stray dog has strayed from somewhere. It's a dog that doesn't belong in this place. It's a dog that belongs somewhere else and has strayed from there to here. And in the use of the word, we reveal our how we feel about these dogs. Yeah. We feel like they're matter out of place. We feel like they don't belong there, because in our minds, we feel that a cultured society is one where all the plants and the animals behave as we want to. There is either they are trained animals that we control, or they're wild animals who are away. We don't see them, you know, they're somewhere in the tropical forests. We don't want to see them. But animals that have lived their own lives out of their own free will right around us, sometimes it confuses us. It doesn't feel like, you know, what I like to say is we envision human cities as sites of human dominion. We want to demonstrate. Cities are places where we demonstrate. Look at how much of nature we can control and make it cultured.
Yeah,
and make
so
it
true.
Look like the way we want to look. Make it look like. So it's a show of our power a lot of times. Not always, but a lot of times. And so dogs kind of don't fit in that. You know, they don't free living dogs don't fit in that image. And so it bothers us a lot. So there is a lot of other kinds of agendas that are part of, not agendas, I'd say a lot of conditioning that forms our opinions. And so we just feel so uncomfortable looking at free living dogs because it doesn't feel right to us at all. So we have to ask ourselves, is it really about the dog, or is it about our cultural conditioning that is making us uncomfortable looking at this?
Yeah.
A lot of people say, oh, you know, but I saw injured dogs. Well, if you've been to India, you'll see injured people too.
Yeah.
You know, there is a lot of suffering around. There is human suffering, animal suffering.
You see injured wildlife as well. You see injured deers in the forest.
Yeah.
Or pigs. But you cannot take all deers inside because some of them are injured.
Absolutely. So the other day I saw a snake out here, half eaten.
Yeah.
It happens. Things happen. You know, that doesn't mean that, you know, now we need to rescue all the snakes because they're getting eaten. Right? There was a massive lizard that was covered in, has fallen into our tank where we are curing lime, and was covered in lime and has died. That doesn't mean that I have to get rid of all the lizards because, you know, one lizard suffered a horrific death in my lime tank, right?
And it's nothing that we save this one animal which is fallen into the tank or which was hit by a car. It's nothing wrong with that, but you cannot save all of them because one accident happened.
You know, this is true for children too, isn't it? I mean, when you have children and they start growing up and they start exploring the world, they can get hurt, and we want to protect them with all that we got, but we have to kind of at some point accept it and say, yes, we can't keep them, you know, at home all the time. We have to at some point say, yes, they're going to make their own decisions, and some of it is going to hurt them. They're going to meet people, some of them are going to hurt them. We're going to try our best to be there for them. That's really what we can do. And like you said, if you see an animal that's hurt, you can stop and help. With street dogs, for instance, and this is kind of where I'm trying to put a bit more attention into, is what are the kinds of things that ends up in situations where they get hurt, where we can do something about it, you know, to help them. So, for instance, we see that when we are feeding them, if we feed them all in one area, they tend to fight with each other. So if we kind of separate them and feed them, it helps. If we feed them away from human beings, so kind of late at night, you know, a little bit away from where people stay, it reduces conflict with human beings. So them getting hurt by humans is reduced. The dogs around here, I can't adopt all of them. There are so many out here. But what I can do is I deworm as many as possible. I, you know, when I see them injured, I make sure that I clean up their wounds. I see, you know, so these are kind of, we should be putting effort into having this conversation. This is a conversation a lot of people don't want to have. Instead, we want to talk about, let's just get rid of them, let's kill them, let's, you know, get them all adopted. We have anywhere between 10 million to 100 million dogs in India, you know, the estimates say. How exactly are we going to do that? Are we going to have the blood of 100 million animals on our hands?
They did similar things in Romania. It was really horrible. There were hundreds of dogs in every street, and they killed 90% of them. And it was really, I mean, it was in the media. I don't know if you saw it in India as well. It was really bad. Very bad.
Yeah.
Do you see difference from a behavior aspect between dogs living on the street and between dogs as a pet dog? Because what I see very often is that pet dogs are most of the time way more excited. They play more rough with each other. What are your experiences?
Yeah. Excellent observations. And I definitely see that. So at a very high level kind of an observation, that's the first thing that you start noticing when you see it, you know, the difference. You notice that pet dogs tend to be more hyperactive, and the way they communicate and play is also kind of very the way they play is quite rough. But if you start looking beneath the surface, I also see so one of the things that we do at Barks, at the workshops that we do, is paying very, very, very close attention to their communication. So we kind of obsess over it. I make my students watch these videos over and over and over in slow motion so they can really look at, you know, what's going on. And we see that street dogs or dogs that were taught how to be dogs by other dogs. So, you know, they have learned their language from, you know, the experts. And they're very good at communication. They read very small signals. They respond to it very quickly, and they give small signals. So it's subtle. Whereas with pet dogs, I see that they ignore signals a lot. They are not able to see other dogs' signal until it's very loud. So it's almost like they scream at each other, kind of a thing. So it's big, loud movements. Whereas with street dogs, it's very subtle movements. It's very rapid. So that's another very interesting thing that we do, is I try to capture the dogs in, on my farm, playing with each other and communicating. And I engage with my students to say, okay, what do you guys see? You know, and what do you see? Even when they play rough, even when they run. So in the morning, sometimes there's a beautiful, beautiful black dog that comes here, and Chiru loves him. And she runs out to play with him. And because she's a pet dog, she likes to run. But he teaches her so beautifully. They run for about 5-10 seconds. And then he says, enough. We need to take a break. Breathe in, breathe out. Sniff, 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 sniff. And then they might run for another 10 seconds. And their entire play lasts about 2 minutes, not more. And after that, they all take a break. They want to relax. And they're done. There's really not much more. That kind of self-regulation of emotions is also something I do not see as much in pet dogs as in free-living dogs. And I think my dog Chiru is benefiting a lot because she gets to play with these dogs. So she's learning from them. So she's learning the rules of the dog world from the dogs. And I can never, never, you know, teach her anything close to this complicated. So to me, this is beautiful. And I encourage my students in India definitely to try more of that. And for students from outside India, we kind of try to share videos of what we see. So, you know, there's some ways for you to enable it. And I also see that a lot of so-called problem behaviors that we tend to see in our pet dogs, it's very rarely seen in street dogs. You know, you see our companion dogs or pet dogs tend to have behaviors like chewing things up, you know, destroying things. They eat things without thinking. They eat just anything that they see, many of them. They don't have that kind of good judgment necessarily. And they can be very, very reactive to people, very reactive to other dogs. They don't know how to play with other dogs. A street dog who doesn't know how to play with another dog or doesn't know how to be polite to another dog will not survive for too long. So they have to learn how to be good to each other. Even if they don't like each other, they have to learn how to at least exist in each other's space with some amount of respect. Not that they don't have conflict, they do. But to a great degree, a lot of the conflict has to do with I know, I you know, I want to say this, I want to say this, but at the end of the day, they're like, okay, we won't hurt each other. We will just yell at each other and then go away and we'll sort it out. Those skills again is something that I see significantly different in pet dogs, and I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to learn if we have a little bit of respect and humility to learn from them.
I think, I'm not sure what you think about it, but I think it's also genetic, because I don't see like high specialized, super energetic dogs as street dogs. So there are no border collies or malinois on the streets. And my theory is that they wouldn't survive because they have too much energy, but it's in the breed, it's in the genetics.
The whole genetic angle, there's definitely a role for genetics in in behavior. There's no sort of arguing that, but I think we attribute a little too much to it. So for instance, the difference between a pet dog behavior and a street dog behavior, even with the same dogs, even with these dogs, the same set of dogs that live outside my home, if I adopt them and bring them into my home, within 2 weeks, I see them starting to behave like our pet dogs.
Yeah.
So all that hyperactivity, all of that comes into these dogs. And within a month, they are more like home dogs than... So it's not a genetic thing that I see, but rather, you know, the behavior is a little bit more in terms of where they live and who they are around and those kind of things. And our presence in their life, I think, makes... a very huge impact. So I'm not saying genetics don't impact them, but I'm saying that this thing also impacts them in such a large way that we kind of, when we talk about genetics and focus so much on it, we ignore this side of it. But we have a huge role to play. And the second thing to remember is Chiru's friend Boy was walking in front of my house just now, so that's why I was smiling. He looks like a black retriever.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't look anything like any of the dogs that I have seen here. He's got long coat, you know, black, shiny, long coat. He looks like some kind of a European breed mix. And let's not forget that in India, European breeds have been being brought to India and mixing with these dogs for over 500 years, if not more. So the dogs that we see here, in fact, our local indigenous dog expert tells us that the local land races that we say that are the, you know, pure breed, local Aboriginal dogs that are called in dogs out here. She says you hardly see them in India anymore. You know, they're all mostly gone. The ones that you see are cross breeds, crossed with European breeds. One of the places that I was working, I remember walking out of my office and seeing a street dog that looked a lot like a Great Swiss Sennenhund. And I was thinking, why does an Indian street dog look like a, you know, Swiss mountain dog? It doesn't make sense. And sure enough, a few days later, I see this lady who's walking her Swiss mountain dog on the road. So now I know what has happened. That dog has escaped and mated with a street dog, and there have been puppies that are born. So we do see mixed breed dogs a lot. So I think separating them out, that's another mistake that I see a lot of people make, is thinking that Indian street dogs are a breed by themselves and they're very, very different in genetically. They're not. They have stopped being different genetically. They are pretty much be a lot similar to a lot of mixed breed dogs that you guys might see in a shelter in any part of your world. Those are the kind of mixes. Maybe there's a small component that you see consistently of our local land race, but that's the only thing. They're just a part of it. And so I think I would urge people to also engage in that discussion. What is the role that we are playing in their lives? And is it necessarily a good role? If a dog comes into my house and within 2 weeks is starting to show all these problem behaviors, the question I need to be asking is, what are we doing differently?
It's so funny that you say that, because we run a free webinar about how to, what we can learn from dogs living on the street in points of calmness. So why are street dogs so calm and so relaxed and all this, and what can we learn for our pet dogs? And the comments under these free webinars are most of the time, well, but I have a street dog and it's super highly active, it's hyperactive. And then I tell people, hey, it's about dogs still living on the street. I know, yes. And if you take the dog home, they can behave.
Yeah.
Completely.
And they're not street dogs anymore. I think that's what we need to know. Street dogs is not a breed term.
Yeah.
So a lot of people ask me if Chiru is a street dog, and I say, no, she lives in my home. She doesn't live on the street.
Yeah.
She's as much my family as your dog is your family. Just the way your dog sits on your sofa and sleeps on your bed, my dog sits on my sofa and sleeps on my bed, and she's my family. She's not a street dog.
Yeah.
A street dog is a dog that lives on the street, and it's not a breed category.
Yeah.
I think that's very important for us to understand.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting. I could go on with you for three more hours. But is there anything, as a last question, is there something that you really want people to understand about street dogs, stray dogs, farm dogs, or dogs in general?
Yeah, I think I would like to invite people to envision a world where we don't look at dogs on the streets and say, oh my God, they're matter out of place. We need to get rid of them. These are animals that co-evolved with human beings for millennia. They have been living alongside us. They're called a human's best friend for a reason. They've been living alongside us ever since human beings became human beings. And they've always found a role in our society. And they're very, very good at making friends with us and cooperating with us. And yeah, I would love if we can appreciate that without demanding that they give up their freedom and say, can we appreciate the role that they play in society and examine that with a bit more of an open mind? I think community dogs, especially out here on the farm, I'm so happy that there are free living dogs because they are great. A security system. They are great companions.
Yeah.
When I'm feeling down and miserable, walking out and seeing Iti and Yaya and Chaita and their happy faces, they do have beautiful gifts to give us. Even street dogs, don't look at them as pathetic animals that are just miserable, that need to be saved. Stop and look at what they can give you, and there's just beautiful things that they can give us.
Yeah.
And if we start opening our mind to it, I feel something magical can happen.
And
let's
can
learn from them. That's
project,
really
projects, right? Because you cannot say, okay, there are street dogs and they get more and more and more, but you can still do castration projects, but let them live free and let them their freedom.
Yes, there are population control mechanisms we can use. And of course, we have to have open and honest discussions about, the ethics of a lot of these things. How ethical is it to catch an animal and remove their body parts? That's one fit. But the other part of it is, does it improve their welfare if we actually castrate them? And a lot of times it can. So, having open discussions about this is kind of the right direction to go, rather than saying just get rid of them, saying okay, can we have a little bit more nuanced discussion? Is there a way to control their population? Is there a way to coexist? Is there a way to address conflict so that we don't get into issues with them? Those are constructive conversations, and I think it's very, very important for us not to miss out on the opportunity to learn from them.
Yeah,
they have something to offer to the world. Even if you don't have street dogs in your part of the world, the dogs in my part of the world have beautiful messages if you're willing to listen. If you're willing to not kind of just dismiss them off as, just poor animals that need, there is more to them. There is more richness to their lives. And if you're willing to watch and observe, I have been posting a lot about the farm dogs here and the drama in their lives. And I write blogs about, the kind of things that go on. There's just so much interesting family drama between all these dogs. It's like watching a television show. And if we can invest in it, I think it would be wonderful.
Yeah. Beautiful last word. Thank you so much. If people want to learn more about you, I mean, they can watch the TED Talk, they can read your book. I need to read the book as well, but we are on a tour through Turkey and Georgia now. So I cannot send it to a place because we're moving every second day. But I will read your book. But what are other funnels? How can people get in touch with you? How can people learn from you?
Sure. I think the best way to learn from me is to do the workshop that we have, the foundation workshop that we call Canine Essential 101. It sort of really introduces you to all the ideas that we talk about. When we talk about learning from dogs and kind of managing our dogs without training them, and how dogs communicate, these are all kind of interesting ideas that kind of have come inspired by the street dogs. And so getting that foundation in, I think, can be excellent. And we've just launched kind of a live component to it called the Barks Auditorium. So we have a lot of interesting live sessions that happen there. Recently, we had a discussion about the power of numbers versus stories when it comes to studying animals. So those kind of very interesting conversations go on in the Barks Auditorium. And so if you do the Canine Essential 101, you get access to it. So I think that would be a great place to start. Everything comes together. And then, of course, we put out content on our blog and social media as well. And Dog Knows, learning how to learn from dogs is my good place to go.
So how can people find you on Instagram and Facebook? What is your name? We can put it in the show notes.
Barks Education on Instagram. And so it's BHARCS, Barks Education on Instagram, and Barks on Facebook, and www.barks.com, BHARCS, Barks.com is our website.
Perfect. And I put it in the show notes and people can find it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. This is such a pleasure.